We just stepped on their face with a hobnail boot and broke their nose.
Talking about them fucking dogs. That's what I told them.
Hope it doesn't take that long again. Go dogs.
Go dogs it is. Welcome back to the 100 Sanford Podcast. We are back after a one-week hiatus. Sickness. Meetings by Mr. George Foster doing things nationally. But we're back in the building. Big G, what's going on, man?
I'm good, man. What's up with Captain COVID?
Man, I'm trying to figure out if they still call it COVID-19 or COVID. I don't know what it is.
It's COVID 2024. It's COVID 2024. That's what it is.
Man, this version of COVID is wiping your boy out. I had it one time already, and that one was just physical ailments like 2-3 days over Christmas last year. This year, man, it's put me under for about 7 or 8 days, 9 days.
Really?
You could hear it. Yeah, man, you can hear it in my voice now. It's I'm struggling. You're going to have to carry us.
Huh?
I said, you're going to have to carry us.
Oh, no, man. I ain't got the silky smooth vocal stylings of Lamar Lovely.
No, nah, brother. You know what this is? This is like New Edition. You know what I mean? When New Edition had Ralph Tresvant, and then all of a sudden Bobby Brown had the breakout. That's you, baby. That's you. You got to do that tonight. We got Graham getting ready to come on. I think he's having some problems with his computer, but he's definitely trying to get on. And then we got a big time special guest. But before we even get started, man, y'all got to go down there, hit the subscribe button, hit the like button, follow us on YouTube, TikTok, IG. The X, follow us everywhere. We got that great content. Also, make sure you follow Dog Central underneath the Players Lounge right now. So much great content coming out of there. Graham is putting out stuff, excuse me, folks, left and right, and a lot of great content. Football season's over, but right now, man, look, basketball season has hit high gear. You got the Senior Bowl going on. You got the NFL with a lot of dogs still playing in the big time games. But even as we're talking, I got to have the basketball game on in the background. Foss, those boys are playing. Those boys are playing right now. Mike White got them playing real well. Yeah, man. Right now, even as we're recording, but we're watching the game, it's 39-25. Mike White got those boys beating down Bama. Hey, a little redemption, right? You're on mute.
I say we just gotta hold on to it though, man. You know,
yeah, definitely gotta hold on.
I had similar hope versus Tennessee, and I watched that dwindle about a minute. That's... You know, we were up double digits against them too, but yeah, we got them. 39-25 right now, and we're going to see what's happening.
You know, Foss, you got to give it up to them, man. They're playing some good ball right now. It seems like Mike White has finally got this team playing together, mixing and gelling. If they weren't so daggone streaky, they would have beat a couple of those other teams. Yeah, they get streaky at times, man. Way too streaky for me.
And they got some major recruits coming in.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, most definitely. I gotta give it up though, man. Think you're going in and out. I think I lost you there for a second. But the first thing I gotta do, man, I gotta give it up. I gotta give it up to RJ Menendez, man. He's gotta be the player of the week. You know, last game against Florida. Didn't pull that out, but I called that game over early. I was like, they're done. My man brought them back 35 points versus Florida, shot 60% from three-point range, 5 steals. Right now, got those dogs at 14-6, having a great game already tonight as they head into halftime. What are your thoughts?
Like we talked about last week, that it's, you know, when football is doing well, you know, that kind of rubs off on other programs, you know, and kids want to be a part of that. You know, it helps with recruiting all the other sports as well, because, you know, the kids want to go where it's lit. You know what I mean? And Georgia football got Athens lit right now. So it can definitely help with all the other sports as well. But like we said, man, it's affecting Georgia basketball, and they're having a really good year. And I think it's something really to build on. I think it's, you know, it definitely helps recruiting when you can win, you know, and they already got a couple, you know, some nice recruits coming in, you know, hold on to them. You know, it's not often, you know, Georgia gets 5-star basketball players, you know, and so, nice. And so we got some. Well, I actually saw where one of them was actually. He was snubbed for the McDonald's All-American game. That seemed to be like a big deal with, you know, when you compare him to the rest of the cats that made it. I forget the kid's name, but he's our big 5-star. I think he's a 6'10", like forward, you know, can shoot it, has really good hair.
Issa Newell,
that's his name. Issa Newell he has fantastic hair, and they snubbed him from the McDonald's All-American game, but yeah, man, we got some ballers coming in here, man. Let them match up with football. Let's have two. Hey, it's nothing to have. Florida was doing it, you know, years ago.
Yeah, they were
top football programs and top basketball programs. So it can be done.
Well, look at what it did for Alabama, right? I mean, Alabama's ranked number 24 right now, but Alabama didn't have a great basketball program until Nick Saban went in there and started winning a tradition for Alabama. Then it kind of rolled over. Graham, what's your thoughts, man? Welcome to the show, baby.
Thanks, man. Appreciate you guys having me. Although, I guess why would I say that? Because I'm always here. Sorry, it's been a crazy day. I just look at it as I've heard like Georgia fans for years be like, "Oh, well, I'm not a basketball fan," or like, "I'm a Georgia football fan. I'm not really a Georgia basketball fan." It's like everybody loves a winner, man. You think you're not a Georgia basketball fan, and like, look, man, when they're going 6-26 with lame duck Tom Crean as the head coach, like that's probably hard to cheer for. I understand that. Everybody loves a winner, though, and basketball is a great sport. It's a fun sport. The NCAA tournament is a great event. Being part of it is a fun, exciting thing. And the reality of it is just that, like, if Georgia basketball gets going, like it seems like it's doing right now, I promise you, a lot of you folks that thought you weren't Georgia basketball fans will start having fun with it, because it's fun. It is.
Stegman looks like he's rocking, man. I had the fortune. I was fortunate. You know, a lot of people can't relate to a rocking Stegman Coliseum, but we were good when I was there with Jim Herrick coaching. And we had, you know,
Jarvis Hayes.
We had the Hayes twins. We had, you know, D.A. Lane. We had Ezra Williams. You know, who else? We had a number of guys, man, that really could hoop, and they did really good. We had some big games at Stegman, you know what I mean? Both programs, it was the women's too. You know, I remember we beat Tennessee at Stegman. That was humongous. It was like, you know, this is Pat Summit, you know. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think we lost him. He's been going in and out.
Basketball can be great. I said basketball can be great at Georgia. You just have to, you know, you have to get in the recruits, because just think about it. It's you can field a national power in basketball just in the state of Georgia.
Yeah. I don't know how many people.
There's from here, you know, Yoshlin Sexton is from here. Yeah.
Foss, you're breaking up. I'm going to have to put you on mute and let Graham do some talking on this one. See if you can get that back up and running.
Say what now?
I said you're breaking up over there. You're breaking up real bad.
We can't hear. We're hearing like every 10th word you say right now. I mean, I'm sure that was it's a bummer we didn't get it, because I'm sure it was the most insightful thing I would have ever heard.
All right, let me get it right. Hold on.
No, he's right though. I don't know how many folks remember this, but that era he's talking about when Georgia was rolling in the early 2000s with Jim Herrick as head coach, like Georgia was the only, I think they were the only team in Division I at the time whose starting five all had been recruited from, you know, in-state. All five of the guys that were running things out there were Georgia natives, and Georgia has sat there and watched these, you know, I mean, if you're Georgia and you keep one to two of the top 10 players in Atlanta every year, you'll have success more than likely. And I think like Georgia's watched those kids go to UNC, Kentucky, and, you know, and Florida, and like some of these places at different times. Auburn, even, you know, with Bruce Pearl, has started taking some good players out of the Atlanta area at times. So I think Mike White, like, he's the right guy for it, and he's doing things the right way. And also, I think a lot of credit should go to Josh Brooks and the entire administration for committing to basketball in a real way. And, you know, the things that they've done at Stegman to upgrade that facility, bring some life to it, have been, you know, very impactful. Hiring Mike White, that was a coup. Like going and stealing a division rival's head coach who had made an appearance in the Elite Eight before, that's a boss move. It really is. And, you know, I think that move got kind of like not maybe as much attention as it deserved, because Florida fans were frustrated with White when he left, but he's still a really good coach. And, you know, it's hard to, if you look at the track record of Georgia basketball the last 20 years, being able to bring in a coach to that program who has an Elite Eight on his resume and who had been to NCAA tournaments at, I think, three different schools as a head coach, like that is above and beyond what you would expect to attract to that job in its current state. And so getting somebody that's not like a brief builder instead of somebody that, you know, can really like take you where you want to go is huge for Georgia. And I'm excited to see what happens with it, you know, signing five-star recruits and kind of making the moves that they are on the trail and the things that they did in the transfer portal this past offseason to kind of let them be competitive here for 2024 is all been savvy. It's been all the right moves. So I think, you know, they deserve the support of everybody.
Yeah, Graham, I agree with you 100%, man. When you're able to get Mike White from Florida, that's a big coup. I look at it as a great example of University of Pittsburgh when they lost Jamie Dixon. He went to TCU.
Mm.
Pitt people wanted him gone, right? He can't get to the Final Four, can't get to the Final Four, join the ACC. All of a sudden, the program falls apart. Jamie Dixon's got TCU, a perennial top 25 program, and recruiting at a high level.
Yeah.
Same thing can happen to Georgia. The only difference is that Georgia now has a lot of money, a lot of prestige, a lot of interest going into the program. As you mentioned, Josh Brooks doing what he's doing as an athletic director. The sky's the limit, quite honestly. If they can continue this trend, there's no reason in the world why they couldn't be a perennial top 20, top 15 program annually. There's no reason to me that can't right. happen. Whoa, we have an early entry. Our guest has actually appeared already in the green room. I'm all for it. I'm hyped. I'm pumped. Graham, I've been waiting for this for a long time. This is one of my favorite analysts out there. He's objective. He's national. He talks about every team, every program. in a positive light most of the time.
Most of the time.
I don't know if Georgia fans always feel that way, but welcome to the show. From Late Kick, it is Josh Pate. What's going on, baby?
I mean, are you not used to guests showing up early? It sounds like you guys sit around and wait for guests most of the time.
Not always, Josh.
No, we just tell them a certain time, and they, you know, they come on like you ready to go. We ain't mad.
I know that feel. So down in Columbus, Georgia, I used to do afternoon drive sports talk radio, and we book guys 4:45, and you're looking at the phone, 4:43, 4:44. Hey, bro, you good for 4:45? No response. 4:46, 4:47. I know that feeling. So I try to be 2 minutes early if I can. It's not quite the Tom Coughlin theory of 30 minutes early, but I try and be at least 2 or 3 minutes early.
You're not five minutes early, you're late.
I'm disappointed in one thing, Josh.
Yep.
Where's the white T-shirt?
It's in the wash. I don't have 5 or 10 of those things. So it's in the wash. It's literally as we speak in the washing machine.
You need to get you a white T-shirt contract.
That's true. From your words to God's ear. From your words to Haynes' ear, actually.
Haynes. Yes, right. My man of Haynes.
Well, Josh, thank you for joining us. We got a slew of questions for you. I'm coming off of COVID, so I'm a little bit winded. Graham, I got to let you fire away right now so I can get my breath. But go ahead, baby.
Josh, obviously the biggest news of the offseason so far, Nick Saban retired. You're as plugged into the Alabama program as anybody. You know, I've seen some of your takes around the hire and sort of it feels like people are either really excited about it or kind of dumping on it. I feel like oftentimes the truth is usually somewhere in the middle, but like, what are your thoughts on Kalen DeBoer at Alabama and how he fits into the culture of the SEC?
Yeah, that's basically where I am. So, you know, all of us are from the SEC. So you guys know as well as I do, when someone gets hired who's never been down here, it could be Brian Harsin or it could be Urban Meyer or it could be Nick Saban. Everyone questions, hey, how are you going to fit in? You know, it's like a puzzle piece. And if you're not shaped right, you don't fit in the South and in the culture of the SEC. So I've always looked at that a little bit differently. I changed my tune when Urban came in the SEC because I remember the talk around that more so than when Saban came down here. I remember the talk when Urban came down here and it was like that Mickey Mouse, you know, Mountain West offense and his way of doing things. He's about to get a taste of the SEC, but in reality, the SEC got a taste of him. And so what I learned was there must be a certain set of critical factors. And if you got them, you got them. And the best I can tell, you got to be relentless. You got to actually know what an SEC schedule grind is. And number two, you've got to know people, but it's not the emphasis that folks want to put on it. Folks say, you got to know people. In reality, to me, you got to know people. You got to be able to connect with them. If I've never met you before, you got to walk away interacting with me saying, dude, I love that dude, man. I vibe with him immediately, more so than like half the cousins I know. And so I think Kalen DeBoer's got both those things. The difference with, you know, like a Dan Lanning or a Kirby or a Nick Saban is, he's not what he appears to be on the surface. DeBoer appears to be like laid back on the surface, pretty nice, easygoing. And I was at four of their games this year, including the title game. But I was at both of those Oregon games. I was at the Oregon State game. And I got to be around him a little bit, sort of when the red light's not on. And when you raise the hood on that dude, he's as intense as anyone you want to be around. When he walks in a room, he immediately commands the attention and respect of everybody around that program, players included. So I think the guy's got the relentlessness. I think he's got the intensity. I certainly think he's got the magnetism that you need. So I actually think he's going to recruit fairly well. They've added some player personnel pieces that indicate he knows exactly what the mechanisms need to be to go after talent in the SEC. But the other trade-off is I don't think they have to have a top three class every year under him. And there's also, and we can go down this road if you want to, but in talking to some guys over the past 12 months or so, not just at Alabama, but in the SEC, there's this train of thought that I think is starting to emerge a little bit. And that is, if talent acquisition is a transactional game now, if I can go buy a roster, the age-old attitude of let's hire recruiters over scheme guys on Saturday may be inverting in the SEC because a lot of folks are looking and saying, you know, there used to be a lot of skill in signing a top three class. But if it's just transactional now, if you can go buy a top three class or top five class, then maybe the edge you give yourself on Saturdays reverts back to X's and O's and reverts back to what am I doing to out-scheme you? And if you got a poor man's roster, that doesn't matter. But if you can buy one, which the game allows you to do right now, I think the next several openings in this conference, a lot of schools will probably try and do what Byrne just did over at Alabama, and that's let me go find the best Saturday tactician in the game. Let me make sure I got him resourced to where he can acquire talent the way he needs to. I just have a sneaking suspicion Bama may be a little bit more at the forefront of that than even some of their own fans think, because even some of their own fans looked at it and said, he's never had a top 10 class. How's he going to survive down here? I have a sneaking suspicion he'll do okay, and I think he'll be good over there.
So, well, Josh, I mean, what we saw immediately, what we saw immediately, though, was when he was hired, a mass exodus of actual players leaving. Did he not resonate with those players before they hit the portal? Is it his laid-back personality that maybe caused that, or did he not have enough time to actually kind of build a relationship with them?
Yeah, I actually think that was happening regardless of who you hired. Because I think if you have Nick Saban at your place for 17 years, I guess it was, there's obviously going to be a large chunk of your roster that is there to play for him. They don't care if it's the University of Alabama's logo or UTEP's logo. They're there to play for him. They're not committed to Alabama. And so I think they understood, or maybe they didn't, maybe it caught them by surprise, but I looked at it and thought, there is no path you can go. There's no hire you can make. I don't care if they did get Lanning or Sark or whoever. There was no hire they were going to make that came without that. That's the trade-off for having the best of all time put together the kind of talent rosters he did. A lot of them came there to play for him. A lot of them took far less money guaranteed to come there and play for him. They're not staying there. It doesn't matter what I think of Kalen DeBoer or what some analyst thinks of him. They don't know him. Caleb Downs doesn't know him. Gary Downs doesn't know him. And so that wasn't a surprise to me. I'm surprised in a roundabout way that they haven't suffered more attrition, specifically on defense. And that's why I'm interested to watch spring, because this may not be over yet. Like, they may lose some more guys. I think the acclimation period now is what that's all about for them.
So that was going to be my question. They, you know, once Saban retired and you start getting your tidbits from people and you start learning, like you said, behind the curtain of these programs, and you don't realize that not everybody's paying.
Uh-oh, we're losing you
not
again.
Cash like that. So I'm wondering. Hello? Hello?
Keep coming.
So you find out that you find out that people not paying like that, are they going to change their philosophy?
Right. So there's, to me, a big difference here in cannot and have not. Alabama has not had to pay big money in NIL. Look, Georgia hadn't really had to do it either. Ohio State kind of just decided to veer a little bit more into that lane because they see a great big window to jump through right now. But yeah, it was a huge discount that Bama was getting a lot of guys at that you cannot just assume they'll get them at anymore. All right, so that right there is true. There's this other category. There's this other compartment of takes over here that they can't do it. And I think it may take a cycle, a recruiting cycle, for them to learn that that's not the case anymore, that discount rate's not the case anymore. But I think there's a ton of untapped NIL potential at Alabama that they have never needed to dive into because they haven't had to dive into it with Nick Saban there. Doesn't mean they can't dive into it. And the other thing is, I was sitting in the office of an SEC head coach and his GM this past fall at a game we were at, and I had him tell me, so we think $8 million ultimately in the future is what it's going to take for a roster in a season. Now, he means getting guys out of the portal, your recruiting class, and paying your roster. They said in a perfect world, we would have $8 million allocated for that. All right. Think about that number. That's a lot of money for all four squares of this conversation right now. But you and I both know, even in the state of Alabama or Mississippi, pick the lowest socioeconomic income states in this conference, $8 million or double it, $16 million to acquire a talent roster is not a monumental lift. And that's why I keep hearing these folks say, states like Alabama are going to fall behind in NIL relative to states like Texas or Georgia, even because there are less billionaires in that state. We're not talking about the need to have billionaires bankrolling your NIL operation. You need some deep-pocketed people who are very serious about your football program contending. And as long as that price point is in the upper single digits or low double digits of millions of dollars per year, they will be able to do that. And that's not even talking about a potential future where you enter into revenue sharing deals at the league office level.
So that's interesting. There's been a lot of talk on the Georgia side, you know, in the last week or so, ever since Caleb Downs' announcement came out, about kind of the challenge of educating donors. Like, there's some donor fatigue, I think, that's starting to happen within the core bases of at least, you know, Georgia, I think, with some people who are like, well, I already give to the Athletic Association. Where is this money going? You know, do I get to pick what sport it goes to? Like those kinds of questions are things that have been popping up on my radar lately. And like, I do think it's an interesting time because there's proposals on the table to bring this stuff in-house, right? And to let these schools, you know, use their own revenue to pay the players, which in a lot of ways I think would be a lot easier than asking these collectives to, like, $8 million is not a crazy amount of money, but it's still a lot of money, I think, to raise when you look at some of the people and say, you're not getting anything back for this. Like, you're not getting preferred seating on Saturdays. I don't think it's tax deductible. I could be wrong about that, but I'm pretty sure it's not. Where do you think this is going? Because this Tennessee news with the NCAA popped down yesterday, and the Florida State news shortly before that. Like, all of this feels like things that everyone is doing, if we're being honest, in terms of how some of these players are being compensated now. How does this get cleaned up? Because right now it seems very, very messy.
So it is messy. There is no simple answer for that, but I'll give you a little three-parter here. Part one is, back in 2020, we got COVID going on. So everyone's having to operate under an umbrella they've never had to operate under before. So you could either sit around and ask, well, how long are we going to have to do this? Or you just suck it up and just lean your face in the fan and deal with things as they are right now, knowing everyone's got to deal with it. And luckily, that was a one-year thing. This has got to be the same way. I don't think anyone in their right mind believes college football is just going to sit the way it is right now for the next decade. Somehow, some way, things will right themselves. Maybe not overnight, but I mean, I have got very strong indication over the past couple of months in being in the circles that we're allowed to be in when we go to these bigger time games that the right people are motivated to get things figured out. And that includes folks at major networks as well. So I think it'll get straightened out. In the meantime, it's like holding your breath. You know, I'm eventually going to get to the top. I'm eventually going to get to the surface. I can come up for air eventually. Just how long can I hold my breath? I think that's the way a lot of coaches feel right now. But to go back to the point you were just making, so I mentioned that I was sitting in an office with a GM and a head coach, and they were detailing, you know, what their struggles were and how much money they thought they needed allocated. Well, one of the other points they made was, we're not worried about being able to hit this dollar figure in the first couple of years. We think the biggest struggle is going to be either fatigue, or more specifically, they were concerned that if so-and-so, like if Graham Coffey over here gives me $850,000 in the first two cycles, and I go from 7-5 to 8-4, he's going to look at me and say, I don't think I got a good return on my investment. And they said, what we're struggling to message to people is, you're not paying this money so that we can go above and beyond what we've done. You're having to give us this money so we can just stay competitive with the other folks out there. But he said, that's one thing to say. It's another thing for someone who's given six or seven figures of their own money to tell them, hey, I need you to give me this money, but the results aren't going to change. We'll be lucky if they stay the same. And he said, we're worried about it drying up in 2 or 3 years. That's why we hope something happens in the next 2 or 3 years.
Makes sense.
Well, Josh, how do you change that? How does a team, as you just mentioned, you know, going from 7-5 to 8-4, how did they change that narrative to say, you know what, now even with a 12-team playoff, how can I get my team to go from 8-4 to 10-2? A good example of that is like Penn State. right? Always on the verge, always on the verge of maybe being that team that could play for a national championship, be in the college football playoffs, but or will they be that type of team that can actually take it to that next level? And if they don't, what happens?
So I think the most creative part of this is how do you create ROI that extends beyond the win-loss record? I mean, to me, that's where you got to get some real sharp minds in the room. And they've tried, but it's in such its infancy right now that, you know, I know at a lot of the places, the collectives offer a little package in exchange for your donation. And maybe you get exclusive rights to autograph sessions. These people don't care about that, man. They don't care about a middle linebacker's autograph. They just help buy them. They don't care about that. But they do care about ROI. So if you can figure out and get creative with all the resources at your disposal and access, which I think is a huge attractive contributor to a lot of this, the access that you could offer in exchange for, you know, fill in the blank check every month, that to me, above and beyond just the wins and losses, is how you appease folks. Franklin, you mentioned Penn State. Franklin's done a pretty good job up there of this, but see, Franklin has kept him on the precipice. So James Franklin could reasonably look at his fan base and say, hey, you know, $10 more over here, $10 more over there. It could have made the difference. Now, whether that's BS or not, you can't prove that. And so you never know how close they were to landing one more five-star that would have made the difference in a one possession game that would have sent them onto the playoff. So the struggle is when you're floating just above bowl contention. Florida right now, I guarantee you Napier and them folks are dealing with this right now because they're spending money in NIL. And if you don't give me immediate results this upcoming year, what am I spending money on? I mean, that's reasonable. It's not only real, it's reasonable.
Right, right. You know, another problem that everyone's talking about, obviously, is the portal. I mean, the portal. What are your thoughts on that? Guys jumping, guys leaving, guys coming, guys going. I mean, even it's been rumored that Nick Saban got worn out from the portal, right? So what are your thoughts on the portal, and how can that be fixed?
I think everybody did. Fixed is a relative term here. You got some folks who think it's a good thing. In theory, I like the ability for guys to move. Certainly without the guardrails, it's pretty ridiculous. And so I don't think there's a fix that comes by putting a car in reverse. I do think you have to get to a place moving forward where you've got, to me, at the conference level, the willingness to enter into revenue sharing agreements with your players. And basically, we call that a salary. I don't know if that comes with employment status or not. That's way above my pay grade. I don't even deal in that world. But whatever it takes for that to come at, I don't think it comes at nearly as big an expense as what the alternative is. Like in the last hour, we just watched Halfley leave Boston College for the NFL. And I got coaches hitting me up right now saying, this is shocking. Did you see this coming? I said, well, with him specifically, I didn't know he was leaving. But in general, I'd be shocked if more of that didn't happen. And so, you know, that's the collateral damage by not doing anything. So, I mean, you had it one way. You had folks drag their feet for a long time, kicking and screaming against that employment model. And I understood it. I didn't necessarily disagree with it. But in the here and now and moving forward, knowing that the reverse lights aren't an option on the sport, I don't see how else you do that, because you will never get players or their representation, whatever you want to call it, to agree to just voluntarily put guardrails on a scholarship. Like, how are you going to get those guys, much less make it legal? How are you going to get those guys to sign a piece of paper that locks them in for 2 or 3 years minimum? The way you're going to do it is money. That's how you do it. And it's not going to come from the university. I think it has to come from the league office or whatever entity that league office goes in business with another league office and creates.
Yeah. Well, I mean, let's be honest, right? Like the Halfley leaving is a great example of, you know, I know that Boston College is an ACC school, and I know that the ACC is a Power Five league. Like, intellectually, I understand all of that. Correct. Yeah, exactly. Quotation marks around all of this. And I think this new playoff expansion is good for the sport because it can sell hope to a lot of people. Like Franklin, who we were just talking about, is a perfect guy in this scenario to say, hey, we're a playoff team now. And once you get in the tournament, who knows what's going to happen? Like that sells. The Michigan States of the world, I think, will benefit hugely from this. But does it feel like to you we're just kind of heading to a point where we're going to stop pretending like the Boston colleges and you know, some of their ilk are part of the same sport as the Penn States or the Georgias or the Alabamas of the world, and just kind of break this thing off and really professionalize it with the best 30, 40 teams, whatever the number is.
Yeah. I don't even know if the number's that high, but yeah. And you think about this now. The four of us here watch the game every Saturday. We've already been participating in this a little bit. Like, we know Boston College, as is, was not playing the same caliber of ball that Georgia was. They weren't playing the same sport. They were playing on the same field dimensions. The ball looked the same, and it was on TV, but it wasn't the same. But we were willing, for the overall greater good of the sport, to just use the moniker Power Five, and we're going to pretend Washington State and Florida State at their best, they're the same thing. Well, they never were. So now you've just put an exclamation mark on the end of it. You turn the volume up to 11 on this, to where even the casual fan looks at it and says, whoa, man, these Big Ten teams and SEC teams look a whole lot different. These strengths of schedules look a whole lot different, to where I think it's common sense that we're headed towards that point. And I think it's also common sense when you watch, this is what I'm waiting on, when you watch and see what this 2026 and beyond media rights agreement is for the college football playoff, which is not agreed upon right now. Most people don't get that, but it is not finalized past the next 2 years. When that gets hammered out, after that, I think will come the domino effect of, okay, let's see what the SEC and the Big Ten do. This mess with Tennessee, you may think it's disconnected from this. It's not. Because in that futuristic world, you also probably have built in their own governance structure where they are not attached to the NCAA anymore. And football is its own thing, and it has detached itself from, you know, the rest of the classic bubble of athletics of a university, which is wild. And it's especially wild to tell yourself 10 years ago, but I don't know that that's not the smartest approach from here moving forward.
Does it? Look, you love college football, and I love college football, and all of us on here like love college football, and that's why I think, you know, we're here right now doing what we do. Does it change anything for you, like, emotionally? I know that, like, this is a job and all of that, but, like, there is still, I mean, you go to a college football game every Saturday and you see all the pageantry and the passion. The idea of this kind of theoretical world that we're really already in, but continuing to move even further towards, like, does it bother you at all? Does it change anything?
Yeah, it bothers me a lot. I hate it, actually. I hate where we are right now, but I love the sport. So what I tell myself, and what I advise people anytime I'll bring this up on the show, is I'll say, if you have to, just walk away in February, March, April, May, June, July. Just the thing about it is, as long as in week three, when it's third and three on your own 45-yard line, and then it's fourth and one, and you're deciding whether to go for it, and Kirby sends the offense out there, and 5, 4, 3 seconds on the play clock, 2 seconds on the play clock, that feeling you have right there, as long as that still feels the same, you still got your sport. It's the mechanisms around it that are screwed up. The sport on the field's not screwed up. The sport on the field is still as beautiful as it's always been to me. Those stadiums are as electric as they've always been to me. And the magnitude of the games are as big as they've always felt to me. So that part's not messed up. That it would be a problem if your game was terminally flawed and you were trying to trick people into thinking it was good. We got the inverse problem. We got the best game in the world, and we're trying to get fools out of the kitchen and get people in there that are qualified to, you know, continue to just make sure the oven stays at the proper temperature. So that's why I always have hope about it. Even if things suck in the here and now, I know we got a great product. And so if it just means cleaning up stuff around it, that's doable. It's not easy, but it's doable. I would be disheartened if the game itself had been lost.
Well, how do we keep that, Josh?
There was,
oh, go ahead, George, because now you're back.
Yeah, right. You know what's funny? We rewind a little bit, and you talked about breaking off and professionalizing the game and things like that. It's funny. My guy James played at Florida State, played fullback, and he said that years ago, people was asking him, "How do you fix like HBCUs?" And like he was saying that he felt like they should break away from the NCAA and have investors. That's basically what we're talking about. If we take major college football out of the NCAA, and I'm pretty sure they could find investors, especially for the top 25 teams.
I'll tell you the difference. The difference to me, so in, you're talking about private equity, basically, is what you're talking about.
Yes.
The difference to me in the structure that would take versus the structure that we're talking about with member institutions of a conference is the SEC almost becomes like your agent in a way. If you're Florida, if you're Tennessee, it's your agent, and they are looking out for the collective best interest because everyone's got the same agent. It's like Jimmy Sexton is the SEC. And so he's going out, or the SEC is going out, and whether it's licensing deals, whether it's TV deals, they are cutting checks that you're going to get a split of, but also they're maximizing the income, because at the conference level, you're going to distribute that revenue to your athletes. And if I'm an athlete, if I'm choosing between Michigan or Alabama to go play my college football, right now it's which program's the best. In the future, it could be that, but it also could be, what is my guaranteed revenue share cut by being a Big Ten athlete versus being an SEC athlete? Just like in the talent world or the coaching world, do I want to be represented by CAA? Do I want to be represented by WME? And what does that bring with it? That's where I think the conference affiliation, whether the NCAA is involved or not, that's where I think the conference affiliation is so important. And that's why everyone's fighting to get in these conferences right now.
Makes sense.
Hey, I got to take it back to the field for a minute, Josh, because we love to hate on the Gators. Can they get out of their own way? What can they do to revive their program? I mean, even though we don't want them, you know, the program revived, but how can they get out of their own way?
Look, short answer is I don't know. I have a big question mark in my mind whether like a DJ Lagway can come in year one at quarterback and be the savior for that program. And I think he's a supremely talented player, but you have trouble doing that as a true freshman at a place where everything else is built around you at an elite level. That is not the case at Florida. And you're also asking a guy to come in and just boom, immediately be the spark. And I've got trouble seeing it. And I also think, as much as it's nice to have patience, Michigan just showed what happens if you do exhibit some patience. In the long run, it can pay off. That's not always the way it happens. Sometimes you stick with a guy and then you end up firing him 4 weeks into the next season, and your fan base is looking and saying, well, why didn't we just fire him last year? Like, what changed in the first 4 weeks of this year? So that's that balancing act that's going to be the entirety of 2024, playing the toughest schedule in the SEC, by the way, for Billy Napier.
Well, but are they waiting for Deion Sanders?
Look,
that's my thought. I've been saying it for since he got to Colorado.
We're waiting on Deion. From where I sit, I would sign up for it because I don't have to bear the brunt. I don't have to suffer the ramifications. I just get to talk about it. I'd love to see it. I would just love to have one of those like permanent little trail cams on various FSU fans if that were to happen. Because what if not only are they stuck in the ACC, but they also have to watch one of the most noteworthy players in the history of this game that happened to wear a spear on his helmet once upon a time go coach in Florida?
Incredible television.
That would be look,
man. Speaking of television, when you were talking earlier about like hiring a scheme guy who knows how to maximize talent and going and buying him a roster, my head was like, man, Dan Mullen, it is your time, my friend. Like, because there is no better scheme guy than Dan Mullen. And do you think he ever gets back in coaching? Not that you have any sort of, you know, inside knowledge, or maybe you do, but I just feel like, why wouldn't you if you're him? And
only a matter of time. Only a matter of time. A lot of the coaches, when you talk to them, they talk about Mullen. I heard Dan Mullen's name more this year from coaches than I did when he was coaching. And what they were talking about was they are thinking about following his blueprint. And that is, now, not get fired, but get out of the game for a little while. Go work at ESPN or CBS or wherever and just wait it out. Wait for the sport to eventually decide what it's going to be. And then jump back in. And I talked about this Sunday night, and folks called
BS exactly. And you stole my – you kind of led it to my question without me answering. I hate to cut you off, but I was like – that's. I was going to ask you about that because there was a poignant clip that you posted on Twitter, and I actually commented on it. I was like, it makes sense. And I'm like, I'm just crossing my fingers. I'm happy to have Kirby for as long as we have him. You know, I think he loves football. You know, I think he's a really a football dude. I don't know if he would leave early or stay for 20 years or not, but you have to think that it's on these coaches' minds the way the game is now.
Yeah.
With NIL and all of that stuff.
And I think if you're at the top of your game, and I'm speaking very generically here, if you're a coach from USC to Syracuse, anywhere in between, and you're at the top of your game, you're probably financially secure enough where you can take time away from the sport. And a lot of folks have looked at Dan Mullen. He got fired, but forget about how he exited Florida. They've looked at him and they said, hold on. Mullen's like John Gruden was several years ago. Gruden gets fired in Tampa, goes and does Monday Night Football, and all of a sudden, 5 years later, his name is at the forefront of every job search. And you ask yourself, he hasn't coached a game since he got fired. How has his stock risen so much? Well, the answer is everyone's a genius when you're on TV, because every coach sounds like a scientist when they're on TV relative to normal folks because of the way they can break the game down. And they're never wrong on TV. It's a very beautiful thing. So you can go do that, minimal pressure, make decent money, money you don't need, and you can raise your stock in the process, and you can choose when you get back in. And you can wait for specific jobs to come back open. And a lot of guys are looking right now saying, I hate the lifestyle I have to live because of the way the sport's broken right now. I've got maximum equity built up. I could easily go do what Dan Mullen's doing or just go sit on my porch and pop up every now and then. And 5 years later, if the sport's rectified itself, I'm in my early 50s or mid 50s or late 40s, I'll just hop back in. Like, that's coming. I promise you, there are very big names in this sport that have contemplated that for a couple of years. And tomorrow, it wouldn't shock me if that was a breaking news headline in our sport. It could happen anytime.
Should Georgia fans be worried?
I think a lot of fan bases should be worried. I would not specify
to Georgia. Smart answer, Josh. That was a good one.
Look, that stuff comes where you least expect it. That's what I'll say. It comes when and where you would least expect it.
Not too many people got back-to-back national championships and a whole lot of money.
he'll sit down
somewhere, and like, I wouldn't be surprised. I'd be sad, but I wouldn't be surprised in the least bit. And let me stop talking. I don't want to put that in the atmosphere.
Yeah, leave that there, George. What are
you doing? I don't want to put that in the atmosphere.
Big Stick Nick laid it down already. Big Stick Nick laid it down. Now Kirby's the king. And that's what we consider Kirby to be, the king of college football. What are your thoughts on Kirby, the state of this Georgia program right now?
Got a chance to be the face of the sport. Got a chance to be the premier brand in the sport. Got a chance to be the face of the sport. If that's something that he wants to embrace. Not all guys want to embrace that. It's hard enough to do your job, to have the added pressure of everyone turning to you for a comment every time there's a big story in the sport. That's not something everyone wants a part of. And I think he's picked and choose when he's done that. I bring this up all the time. When they won their first title a couple of years back, and they do the whole interview the next morning where they got you on ESPN and you just get a big platform, say whatever you want to. I don't think many people remember this, but he did not take a whole lot of time to promote his program. He took time to talk about burnout and how many good people were leaving the game. He's talking about this stuff 24 months ago, and it's only gotten worse. And so that was the first time that I really remember Kirby going out of his way to speak about things way bigger than Georgia football. And he's got an opportunity to do that because in the absence of Nick Saban, Saban walking out inserts a ton of oxygen in the room. So someone's going to grab it up. Naturally, you got to be a winner and doing it at the highest level before you're even capable of breathing that air, which Kirby is, and not many others are operating like that. So you got a chance to go on a run here that he's already begun. So to continue to go on a run where you're going to have a bunch of folks, me included, saying what we just saw from Nick Saban, you'll never see again. And there's one guy in the sport right now who theoretically could prove that wrong, and he's in Athens, Georgia.
How do you minimize that stress, though? You know what I mean? Because since the game has changed a lot, is it the size of the staffs? I mean, these guys have mega staffs now, you know, recruiting budgets that are out the wazoo. How does a coach minimize that stress level to continue the longevity of someone like Nick Saban or some of the old coaches of the past?
So I talked to him this past summer. Yeah. And I asked him that. He said, the biggest change I've been willing to make is I'm willing to delegate more. I'm willing to trust specific people in the organization more with things that I used to demand be on my plate. But the trade-off with that model is if you've got someone that's good enough where Kirby Smart trusts him to run an integral aspect of his operation, they're going to be good enough to get mega offers in the not too distant future. And so good people are always churning in and then out of your organization. So the long-term solution is if you want it to operate at a consistently high level, you got to do a tightrope walk. There is no easy way to maintain that. There's an easy enough way to maintain being bowl eligible at Georgia. I mean, the helmet will get you bowl eligible, but if you want to be what they are every year, in the moment, you may have a staff that's just golden, and in a given year, you can afford to delegate a little bit more, but the better that staff is, the higher the likelihood it's not going to stay together long-term.
I think you really got to last in the game now. I think you really have to embrace the new way now. It's not going to – I can't see it going – it's not going to go back to the old way. That's for sure. But I feel like you have to embrace it. And I think it's going to take some of the younger guys to be able to embrace it. And next thing you know, this becomes the norm.
Yep.
You know, and they have to embrace it head on and be willing to do it. Like some of the guys that are great now, they're old enough. I think I mentioned the other day, they're old enough to be old school, but just young enough to embrace it a little bit, but they remember the old way. And, you know, it's up in the air whether they want to continue with this new way or not, and they might, you know, step out like you said the other day. You know what I mean? So it's like that's the only way to really attack it nowadays is really just to go head first and accept the way it is and just roll like that.
Hey, the other thing to mention is he's done a good job of this. Glenn Schumann's had offers all over the place. Glenn Schumann hadn't left. So at the very least, he's built an environment there that's conducive to guys being willing to stay until they get the offer they literally cannot turn down. If you just create that, you probably buy one or two more years on the ends of certain guys' careers at Georgia. And look, that in and of itself is enough to set you apart. And I remember talking to someone in their organization about a year or two back, and they said, you know, there were times early when Kirby was at Georgia where it felt almost impossible to work here. And it's the exact same way it was at Alabama when he was at Alabama. He learned it that way. He thrived in that environment. That's what he created at Georgia. And he said there were some instances where guys left that probably Kirby looked at and said, you shouldn't be leaving here yet. But yet he ultimately had to realize maybe the atmosphere here is part of the reason they left. Now, there's a fine line you walk because you got to have a tough enough environment to win where if guys walk away, maybe Georgia just wasn't for you. But you also got to have it where good people who are made of the right stuff aren't looking to get out because it's, you know, past the line in the sand. I think that line in the sand, he's learned from a psychological aspect how to redefine enough without losing the program's edge. And I think that's paid off in certain people, some names you know, some names you don't know, being willing to stick around there longer than maybe they would have if this was 2018.
Yeah, absolutely. I kind of wonder if that was, you know, Coach Luke, like it was like ended up just leaving. Now he's back coaching again.
Right.
You know what I mean? What, he took a year? Just 1 year off?
Couple of years. 1 or 2 years, yeah.
Two.
Well, what's interesting is that seems a lot like what Nick Saban did.
Yep.
Guys get burned out. He brings back the same guys that coach for him. Kirby's done the same thing. I mean, I guess he just learns from the master. The Padawan becomes the Jedi, so to speak. Go ahead, Graham. I think you had a question, buddy.
Well, no, I do think, you know, there's some validity to that. And, you know, you were talking about Schumann earlier. It's like there's some parallels there with Kirby and Schumann as there were with Kirby and Saban. And just in terms of Georgia tried to hire Kirby to come be DC on more than one occasion under Mark Richt. And, you know, there was I think one kind of famous example towards the end of Rick's tenure where Nick sat down and was like, why would you go take that job when it, you could be the head coach there in a couple of years? And that was exactly how it played out. So, I mean, I think that is one of the values that has come for Kirby is sort of just the trust that that he's earned from the coaching fraternity in terms of like, this guy probably knows what he's saying and probably can give me some good advice on where to go next. But Saban was always able to kind of overcome that, all of that churn for years and years and years and always made good hires and replaced people. Do you think that eventually kind of caught up with him and was one of the factors that sort of led to him leaving out the door?
Yeah. Yeah. I'll be as specific as I can. I talked to him last spring about that. They had made their coordinator hires, which he has to do all the time. So they brought in Kevin Steele. They brought in Tommy Rees. And you talk to some of these coaches off the record, they will be blunt with you. They will be very brutally honest. And I was just very curious about why them. You know, that's what I want. Why them? Why'd you arrive at them? And I was ready for about a 2 or 3 sentence response. And instead, I got about a 15-minute response on what the landscape is like right now, who's hireable, who's not, what it takes to hire someone, what the process actually is, which, by the way, if we could do like a 2-hour show just on how hires happen versus how the public thinks they happen, it would blow people's mind. It is nothing like what 99% of folks think it is. Hmm. And so I walked away from that little 10-15 minute exchange dumbfounded in good ways at number one, just that process this past year, but then extrapolate that out over 10-15 years and that guy having to rebuild his staff, not to mention seeing a bunch of first round draft picks go off every year. That's the part that'll never be duplicated to me. Like if you're going to match his trophy case, you better create an environment like Dabo has. Dabo's done it at Clemson where guys stick around forever. They're willing to stick around forever. It's just a different way of doing things. If someone's going to match him, I do not think you'll ever match Saban doing it the way Saban did. You may match his trophy case one day, but you better be able to retain assistants and coaching staff better than he did, because that is insane to be able to. They never dropped past rung two. At any given point in the sport, they never dropped off. There was never a dip in a rebuild. They just stayed at cruising altitude. No matter the turbulence, they stayed at cruising altitude the entire time till the very end. They were overtime away from a title game right before he retired.
Yeah.
It's definitely that's crazy. Did they ever drop past top 10? Never, right?
I think it was a – no, I don't think they ever dropped. I don't think they ever finished outside top 10.
First year. I think first year. That's yeah, it.
No, even the Mac Jones coming in for two a year, I think, you know, they came creep back up in the top 10 after losing to Auburn. But you brought up Dabo. I'm just curious to get your thoughts because obviously Georgia opens with Clemson. You know, everyone has strong opinions about Dabo, good, bad. Either way, it feels like he continues to be a lightning rod. Is he kind of misunderstood or underappreciated? And just sort of where do you think that program is now as we head into 2024?
I think he's it may be underappreciated, maybe the right term, because I think people have trouble celebrating or separating what is now versus an entire resume. So his resume is incredible, speaks for itself. If you want to fault him by becoming too married with the way he did things 8 or 9 years ago and not being willing to evolve, that's fine. I'll listen to that. But that doesn't erase what he did 8 or 9 years ago. And we're sitting here talking about Nick Saban and praising him. Dabo knocked him off twice. Like Dabo did what he did smack dab in the middle of a dynasty at its apex and went head to head with him. It's not like he found Bama in down years. He went through Bama to do it. So you got that part. And I think maybe Dabo's a really stubborn, prideful guy. I got immense respect for him. He's really stubborn and prideful and set in his ways, though. And like, you know, like any of us who had immense success doing something one way, you may be hesitant to change those ways. And then think about this. He may look at the portal and NIL or whatever, and he may just think morally he doesn't like it. Whether you agree with it or not, that may be how, if you open him up, that may be him on the inside. I'm not going to criticize someone who has beliefs and they stick with those beliefs and they adhere to them, even if I disagree with them. Having said that, if you're going to be a college football coach and you're at Clemson, a place where you've shown folks you can win championships, they're going to hold you to that standard. And so you got one of two choices. Three choices. You can either convince them to redefine the standard to where 9 or 10 wins is as good as we can do. You can quit, or you can evolve your ways. Those are the three options. And I think he's kind of stuck somewhere in between on any given day of what he wants Clemson to be. Because they got Florida State living in that transfer portal. And they have dipped their toe in at best. And that is a talent acquisition mechanism that is legally at your disposal that you're choosing not to take part in. That'd be okay if your neighbors weren't doing it, but your neighbors are doing it. And so you cannot expect to cruise at the same altitude you did when you're not doing everything that you're capable of doing to get players.
So that's why I believe he may be, you know, selling the program short or not doing them any justice, because he has to change for them to go up, for them to get back to where they were. And if he's not going to change, that means he's just coasting. So that means he's coasting for however much he's making. You know, he's not going to change. If you feel that strongly about the processes that are in place and that you're not willing to change, go home.
Yeah,
that's my thing. Go home. If you don't go home, you're coasting right now if you don't change. And so is it fair that you get the coast because you don't want to change? And they, you know, now if Clemson wants to pay him the coast, that's fine. That's on them. But I find it kind of hypocritical if you don't believe in the way things are going now and you refuse to change, but you also refuse to quit.
He's the guy on my wish list of folks that I'd want to get on the show, I'd want to get in front of. Dabo's number one, because I do think he gets misunderstood by national media types, and he doesn't do a whole lot of media. So you got the local beat who's never going to question their coach big time. You got the national folks who know that it generates the most engagement if they just take shots at him. I'd love to just sit there and have a good 30, 45-minute conversation with him, because when you do see him in those settings, however rare it is, he is brutally honest, which is probably why they keep him out of those settings as much as they can. But I've never spoken to him. I've never had one-on-one with him. And I'd love to just sit there and say it up front. I got respect for what you've done. I got some fundamental disagreements. You probably know more than me. Lay it out for me. Why do you do this? Why do you believe that? Why don't you do this? And not be confrontational about it, but just have a pretty frank conversation with him.
Well, Josh, I got one more question. I know you got to get up out of here, buddy, but we need your early prediction. You got a 12-team playoff next year. Who do you think is going to run the gauntlet next year and be crowned national champion?
Let's see. Where do I want to go? You better answer. Hawaii, right? Going to go UNLV? I mean, how do I piss off the least amount of people here? I think, to me, same suspects are going to be up there. Georgia's got as good a shot as anyone will have. So I'll get that out of the way. So I'm interested in watching what Oregon does. I'm interested in watching what Ohio State does. Bama for different reasons. But those two, especially Ohio State, these programs that went hardcore in the portal, not to be a 9-win team. They did that to win a national championship. And in Ohio State's case, they're doing something they really haven't done before. Mm-hmm. I'm very interested to see if the pieces, like the stack of bricks, coalesce into a wall. Because there's that team aspect that's more than just going and getting pieces. And we've seen Norvell, I thought, did a beautiful job with it last year. But you saw how quickly that fell apart when no one played in the bowl game. So it's always a very tricky proposition. You go get Quinshon Judkins. That's wonderful. You got Travion Henderson there, too. What's the carry split? Like, who's happy? Who's not happy? I'm curious to see that. Because I love, on paper, I love Ohio State. Love them. Could their weak link be quarterback again? Is Will Howard everything that they hope he is? Kyle McCord wasn't last year. So I would agree with Vegas. I would make Georgia my preseason favorite and then make someone knock them off if I ran Penn State Sportsbook over here.
In my opinion, that's the easy choice. I think I'm a tad biased, but I try to be, you know, objective as possible. Just from top to bottom, I think Georgia has what it takes to win it all, especially with the quarterback coming back. I was so glad he came back. Who's next year's Washington? That's what I want to know. Now, Graham called Washington like long before
day one.
Even day in the one. National picture.
Boy, like, I didn't.
That dude, he was on the Washington before the season started. Like, I don't know what kind
he bought
of
a new RV with all that winning.
I don't know what kind of mojo he got going. Yeah,
and it got repoed from me. I used to own the RV. They took
it. He was like, I like Washington. We were like, okay, they seem cool. They did all right last year. You know what I mean?
Like, who's that's next cute, year? Right?
Who's next year's Washington?
I think Texas Tech. Now, I'm not picking them to go to the title.
I saw that today. I saw you say that. Talk about them today.
Part of it is, so, you know, Joey McGuire's had to play with three quarterbacks 2 years in a row that I think gets overlooked. But also, I think they play – so they miss Utah and Kansas State next year. They play six of the bottom seven odds teams in the Big 12, and they play Arizona the week after Arizona plays Utah. So from a scheduling – I cannot believe I know that in January, by the way. But out of a scheduling standpoint, they got a good path. They're under the radar. And remember how Gary Patterson at TCU used to always do this thing where folks would hype him up and they'd go 7-5 and then everyone would pick against them the next year and they'd pop a big year on you and you'd just be 1 year off. I think a lot of folks called Texas Tech a sleeper last year and they didn't pan out. I think you may have been 1 year off. So I'm going to go Texas Tech and I'm planting my flag here in January, but we will delete this if it doesn't pan out.
Wow. We'll drop it. Yeah, we'll drop it on Selection Sunday if they end up as the 10 seed. Otherwise, no one will ever see it.
Yeah.
Hey, you got a lot more room to play with this year now.
That is true. Just got to make the playoff. That's all I got to do.
Well, Josh, man, we thank you for joining the show. We've been waiting a long time for this to come. I think you're probably the most objective analyst out there. I love watching you, love hearing your takes.
Yep.
And wish you nothing but the best. But tell people where they can continue to see you, and you can get up out of here.
I appreciate it, guys. Anywhere you do your stuff, Late Kick, you like YouTube, Late Kick over there, podcasting, Late Kick. Same thing on Twitter and Instagram and whatnot. So basically, we're trying to make the show where however you like to ingest your content, you'll find it there.
All right. Awesome. All right. Thanks a lot, Josh. We appreciate you.
I appreciate you having me, Josh.
All right. There you go, Josh Pate. Great interview, guys. Great interview. Great information. I love hearing them, man. I mean, yeah. I always tell people, I say, don't hate, just Pate. You know what I mean? Be objective. Watch college football. Watch it from an entire point of view, not just, you know, bioptically looking at you the entire time, but look at.
Not a clickbaiter.
Enjoy it.
Yeah, he just talks ball. He's not trying to shock people. He's not a shock jock, so to speak.
He's not a take artist. You know
exactly.
Yeah.
Well, I tell you what, guys. Since we've been on that interview, the Dogs are now down by three. This is kind of hurting.
It's been rough, bro. I've been sitting here watching it. Like
it's crazy. It's hurting.
It's crazy. They were up by 15. What did I say at the beginning of the show? What did I say?
Oh, the Tennessee game. You said how yeah, man. I mean,
yeah, man.
They can be streaky.
I watched that dwindle.
There's still time to go, but it was. I mean, like you could just see it coming for a half hour, man. You know, it was just
really.
And that's the difference. When you get a good team and you develop a good program, you eventually learn to win. They have to learn to win. And that's just the key to what's happening. They're young in a lot of ways. Obviously, they got a lot of transfers in, but they have to learn to win as a collective unit. And once they do that, they'll be fine. 4-3 in the conference. They still got a little bit longer to go in the conference. So therefore, they can still get to the NCAA tournament game. To the NCAA tournament in general, but they just got to learn to win. And once they learn how to close out games, they'll be just fine.
Got to put foot on next. Like I deal with this on weekends with volleyball with my daughter. Like sometimes a team just you know, you can't be up 7 points and lose. Like, you know, you can't do that. Like, you have to realize that every possession matters.
Facts.
Every last one of them matters. And you got to put, you got to put foot on next, man. They're down four now.
Oh, they're down four?
Yeah, yes. Free throw.
Down five now, 71-66. 3:33 left
in the game. Yeah, I don't think it's going to end well for them, but I'd love to be wrong. So we'll see what happens. I mean, this team has never quit all year. I can never say quit. That for sure. They never, ever quit. So if there's anybody that's going to bounce back, it would be them. But I guess we'll see what happens, you know.
Yeah, most definitely. But, hey, guys, before we get up out of here, first, we'd be remiss not to talk about a dearly beloved mascot, Q, since the last time we were on. Last time we did our show, he is no longer. He has moved on. So we want to give our respects to the family.
What year did Q start? I think my daughters took a picture with Q when he was a young lad.
2015. It was right before Kirby came on board.
So that was 9 years
nine
ago.
9 years ago.
Yeah. 9 years ago, my oldest is 18. They took a picture of Q. He was like sitting in the back of a vehicle and at one of those like fan days, and I took a picture of them and Q. So Q was a.
That's a good long life for a bulldog, man. You know, I had one. One passed away a little over a year ago, but he lasted like 12 and a half years, 13 years, which is long for a bulldog. Q was what, 11? 11 years old, like that.
He's very decorated. I know.
Yeah,
that.
he was 10 or 11. He was old. Bulldog.
He's probably the most successful one by far.
And you know, and the treatment that he got, I mean, people thought he would last forever. I mean,
right.
I mean, his own room, his own coolers, everything he got was first class. So, you know, big ups in puppy heaven to Q. Also, we want to give a lot of respect to those guys that are playing in the NFL. We still got some dogs out there playing, man. Hope that they, you know, somebody's got to win. Somebody's got to lose. I don't know who it's going to be, whether it's San Francisco or Kansas City, but somebody's walking away with one of those golden rings. Kansas City's already won. Hardman's already got some hardware. Was Herring on that team last year? Yeah, he was on that team last year, so he's already got hardware.
No. You mean the Chiefs?
Yeah.
He was on their team.
He's got some hardware.
He's from now around my way. You know, he grew up around, you know, my dad is big with the kids down in Forsyth, Georgia, and that's where Malik was. And but we got to shout out Graham, my guy Claude Felton. Claude has retired. Claude's been there. Claude was at Georgia the year before I was born. You know, so like Claude's been at Georgia for a while. Always great. You know, always gave me old pictures of myself and. Help, you know, with the passes and credentials and all that stuff. And but shout out to Claude Felton.
And pushed our credentials. He pushed the 100 Sanford credentials. So I give him big ups.
Claude is one of the greats of the business. He's been around a long time and is as nice a person as you can find.
Yes, sir.
Absolutely. Georgia, down by
two now.
Down by two. We're going to prove Graham wrong tonight. I know you got to go, Graham.
What's going to happen? Just, you know, real quick before we wrap up, I was going to say with Claude, you know, like, I'm somebody that scratched out a media career, like, literally out of nothing. You know, I just started talking about Georgia football and was lucky that people wanted to talk back. There was a lot of times where I reached out to him and, you know, asked him questions and stuff, and like, for somebody that was a nobody, still is a nobody, if we're being honest, just always made time and always answered. So you're right, man. He's a good guy.
All right, look at hey.
So yeah, sorry, I'm distracted.
Me too.
Bama hit a three, but Justin Hill is
Every time Georgia hits a big shot, Alabama comes down and hits another big shot.
Man, Bama and those 3-point shooting, man.
Oh, again, Jesus Christ. All right, I can't fucking watch this.
All right, man. With that being said, man, as always, see you at 100 Sanford. We're out of here. Right. Go Dawgs.
Go Dawgs.
Thank you for listening to the 100 Sanford Podcast. Tune in weekly to hear fresh content from the 100 Sanford Podcast every Thursday, but also with some pop-up shows every now and then as news breaks. You can also follow the content on our website, www.100sanfordpodcast.com, and email us at dawgs@100sanfordpodcast.com. Lastly, reach out to us on social media streams. For Twitter, it's @100Sanford, but on IG, TikTok, Facebook, and other accounts, it's 100 Sanford Podcast. All right, folks, that's it. And as usual, see you at 100 Sanford.